Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hello, everyone. This is Jeff Salkin for I Am the Community. Today, we have a very special guest in studio, Dr. Hansen. Dr. Hansen is a board-certified primary care physician specializing in family practice medicine. He's president of the San Bernardino Medical Society, the seventh largest medical society in California, which is the county arm of the California Medical Association, and he also chairs the solo and small group practice forum for the California Medical Association. Today, Dr. Hansen and I will be talking about fun in the sun and how that can impact the human body and moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and kids. Welcome, Dr. Hansen.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me in the studio today.
Most welcome. Before we start, I'd like to ask Dr. Hansen to tell us about himself so our I in the Community listeners know a little bit more about his background and why he chose being a healthcare caregiver as a calling. Dr. Hansen.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jeff. Well, just a little about myself. I currently, as you said, practice family medicine in the city of Hesperia. I've been here for 16 years. I did my medical school here in California and did my medical training actually on the East Coast in South New Jersey near Philadelphia, specializing also, like you said, in family medicine. The reason that I got into medicine in the first place, that's kind of a question that people tend to ask doctors, and I think it's an important one because it kind of tells you a little bit about them right off the bat. But I grew up on a farm or kind of a working ranch down near Temecula. And we had everything from horses to cattle and chickens and dogs and cats and about every darn animal that you can imagine. And so seeing nature in its pure form on a ranch and delivering baby cattle and suturing up an animal that was injured or caring for these animals in a really early age, even at just, you know, as far back as I can remember, it really, I think, made an impact, you know, on me. And it kind of stuck with me, I
think.
Taking
care of animals and people.
It was fascinating, yes. I mean, we would see, like I said, you know, things that you wouldn't normally see as a kid if you're growing up, you know, near the mall and you only have pavement around. It was, everything was dirt, and we were out working hard and doing things. But we would see things, if an animal died or, you know, if a snake got run over, we would skin that snake and see how it worked on the inside, and the heart was beating. And so those kinds of things were just absolutely fascinating.
So you were practicing medicine way back when?
At 5 years old, yeah, exactly. Although I don't think I had a really good success rate on saving those snakes or anything. But but nevertheless, it was something that was just fascinating to me. And to extrapolate that out later in life, to the application of taking care of humans, it was kind of just a natural progression, I think. And so it did kind of really influence me at a very early age, I believe.
And that ties a lot into what our subject today is going to be, which is fun in the sun, being outdoors all the time, and being a family practice physician. Here in California, we always have to be mindful about being out in the sun, whether it's tanning or doing outside gardening or working on a ranch or a farm or just going to the grocery store. Since it's summertime, today's topic is especially timing. Let's start with sunburns and actually summer safety and sun exposure. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your expertise and what you observe and, quite frankly, what moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas need to be a lot more mindful of consciously when they are out in the sun here in California?
Right. One thing that we could do kind of initially is just to break down the potential detrimental effects of just sun exposure. And so the, you know, going from the least severe to the most severe. And so there's many of these catchphrases that people may be familiar with. The first would be sunburn, which is a very obvious one that I'm sure many people have experienced. Probably almost everyone has had a sunburn at one time in their life. The next degree of that could be heat exhaustion. And people have probably heard the terms heat exhaustion and heat stroke. And I think a lot of times those two terms are used interchangeably, but there is some subtle differences between the two. So we can get into that slightly as well. And one other thing that kind of is in between that heat exhaustion and heat stroke, which is also very relevant, is dehydration. So those are some of the main things, I think, just in a nutshell, to cover on, you know, making sure that people stay safe this summer.
So let's start with somebody leaves their house or their apartment and they go out in the sun and maybe they don't think it's important to apply a sunblock or something to protect not just themselves, but if you are a mom or a dad or you're a grandparent that's taking care of grandkids, what do people really need to think about?
Right. So the main thing you want to think about, you know, many times people have weather apps on their phones, and there can be actually information that's available to you that you're not even maybe aware of. If you look on, say, Weather Channel or some of these other applications on your smartphone, which almost everyone does, although I tease my dad because he's still got his flip phone. But nevertheless, the point is that you can look at something called a UV index, and it'll tell you that on those weather apps. And that UV index is something that'll tell you for that day and that specific location how concentrated your exposure to ultraviolet radiation may be. And so there's things that affect that, and it's usually by cloud cover amounts and also by intensity of the sun and time of the year, because as the Earth goes around the sun, it tilts, and we get, during the summer, much more intense ultraviolet radiation. It doesn't mean you can't get a sunburn in the wintertime. You obviously can, but you have a higher degree of risk during those summer months because the Earth is slightly closer to the sun.
You were sharing with me before we started recording that, and it does make a difference if you're in the low desert, the high desert, by the beach.
Right.
Could you touch on that?
Yeah, so that UV index is another component to that, because your altitude that you're at is another factor in determining that calculation. And so what can happen is that as you get higher in elevation, the ability of the Earth's atmosphere to filter out ultraviolet radiation that's coming from the sun starts to diminish, because the atmosphere starts to get thinner. So at very altitude, you have less of a barrier, less of a protection that the Earth is providing to the people on the surface of the Earth. So if you go hiking in the mountains, for instance, you need to significantly sunblock and wear hats and these kinds of things, because the sunburn that you might take, say, an hour or two at home, may only take you 30 minutes at an altitude of, say, 4,000 to 6,000 feet or higher.
I was also reading, when I was doing a little homework about sunburns, a lot of people may know this, but some of our listeners may not know this. Your eyes can get sunburned?
Sure, yeah. And no, it kind of, it seems odd, but what can happen is actually you can get retinal damage because of ultraviolet exposure as well, and even some corneal damage. The cornea is the outside layer of your eye, and with high exposures to ultraviolet radiation, that can start to cloud as we get older. So it's a good idea to make sure that you have your kids wearing sunglasses and
right
out in the sun, as well as yourself, or you have glasses that transition to block ultraviolet radiation, because that can increase your risk for developing cataracts earlier rather than later in life. And so that's kind of what's referred to when they talk about a sunburn in your eye.
How about, especially being a family practitioner, how about taking care of kids? I think that when my wife, our two young kids, would go out of the house, I think she put a half a bottle of suntan lotion on each one of our kids anytime they went outdoors. And I wasn't thinking about it, but she was always trying to be careful.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more about how quickly can suntan lotion or block disappear, and how often should we think about applying?
Well, when you go to the store and you see the, sorry to interrupt you there, but when you go to the store and you see the sun blocks, you'll see some that'll say 15 on them, or they'll say 30, or some of them will say 50. And that is basically the amount of sun blocking ability of that chemical when you apply it onto your skin. And what they generally mean is that you have the equivalent of 1 hour in the sun that you can block with the different ratings. So say in a sunblock of 15, it can extend you another 15 minutes of exposure without a burn. A sunblock of 50 can almost double your time of exposure without a burn. So your best bet is to try and get a 45 or a 50 on those sunblocks and apply guide them. But the thing that many people forget to do, especially on their children, is reapplication. And so reapplying those sunblocks, especially if kids are jumping around in the pool and it washes off eventually. And also just it loses its effectiveness just even without being in a pool.
There's no perfect science, but when you say reapplication, how often would you recommend, on average,
right,
that if somebody isn't in a pool, right, or the kids aren't, maybe they're just taking the kids to the grocery store,
right,
or somewhere else to go see family.
If they're not having the sunblock washed off, for instance, in a swimming pool, and they are just going out about town, most of the time they won't be walking most likely to the store, so they'll probably be protected somewhat in the car and all. So most of the time you can probably get away with maybe two applications a day where you're going to be in the car and going places and just walking from a car to the store or whatever. If you know you're going to be outside and you're in a parade that day and you're going to be exposed to sun constantly, then you probably need to reapply. I would say at least every hour and a half if you get a good sunblock. Sooner maybe is even better. The pool factor does change things. I would recommend you put a timer on your phone that probably at least by 1 hour that, hey, it's time to reapply on the kids.
You know? We all have an alarm on our phone. That's really an excellent tip. Here's an interesting one I was reading about. How about on either cool or cloudy days?
Right, yeah. So people think just because it's cloudy that you can't get a sunburn, but you actually can. And in some cases, if there's moisture in there, it can even magnify the effect. And so you definitely can get a sunburn during the wintertime, especially, again, at higher altitudes as well. So you want to make sure that you always, have some sort of, they make moisturizing lotions now that have SPF or sun protection factor. You'll see SPF on the, many moisturizers and those kinds of things. Face moisturizers, women tend to be the ones that are taking care of themselves much more than men do, but it's important that.
I can attest to that.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, because men think that, if they get all that sun exposure and it breaks down all their collagen and they get all those wrinkles, they're just going to look like, they're going to have more character. But
yeah,
the women are not buying into that one. So, I think it's a trend where now you're even seeing that men are starting to, at least to put something on to protect their skin on the significantly sun exposed areas, at least your arms and your face or your scalp. So for some of the men that may be hair challenged or, wear a hat, or get.
Right. But before we transition over to heat exhaustion and dehydration, because I do want to touch on those, if you get a sunburn or somebody gets a sunburn, when is it time to actually see a doctor?
Right. Well, sunburns, there are different degrees to that. And so a second degree burn may be a little bit more concerning because you at that point can not just get that initial redness and heat like you would normally get with the first degree, for a sunburn like most people will have. With the first, exposure, sunburn, or first degree, you're going to get some redness. You'll get some heat from your skin. You may kind of not feel right a little bit. You don't blister. But you may even get a little swelling, like if you burn on the leg, you may notice a little bit of what we call edema. And so those are all, the minor signs, and you can use things like aloe to kind of help soothe in those cases. Make sure you hydrate. So if you get a burn or your kids get a burn that's consistent with that, you want to make sure you're drinking plenty of fluids. And then stay out of the sun. Don't go back out in the sun the next day.
Could you dive a little deeper on the plenty of fluids? I think I hear that a lot,
right,
and I drink a lot of water during the summer just in general or after I exercise. When we're talking about hydrating back because of water loss in the body,
mm-hmm,
is that an 8-ounce glass? Is it gallon of water?
A lot of people will ask that question, right? So usually it's 6 to 8 8-ounce glasses in a day is the recommended.
It's a lot of water.
Yeah, it's a lot. You have to kind of work on that. The thing is there's multiple medical factors that may influence how much fluids you should be taking in. So some of the adults that may have other medical concerns where they have maybe congestive heart failure or other kinds of health problems where they should be limited on their fluid intake, those rules can change. So, generally you want to get yourself like a liter bottle. If you can get those 3 liters in a day, in the morning, and if you're exercising though, then you're going to probably want to do maybe an extra one. But that's probably a good recommended amount so you're not end up, having to find a bathroom every half an hour when you're on a road trip or whatever else too.
And most, most important, you should always be not afraid to ask your doctor about anything that's impacting your body, especially, you know, fluid intake.
Right.
Because you're right, it may vary from person to person.
Right. And I get that every day almost. You know, people, I'll say, now increase your water intake. Well, how much? You know, I have a glass of water a day and I drink my coffee. And it's like, well, coffee is, you know, it actually dehydrates you because it's got caffeine and that causes you to actually lose a little bit of fluid. So yeah, there's a lot to be learned about proper hydration. So definitely people should be discussing for their own personal health concerns what is the recommended amount that they should be taking in daily.
How about heat exhaustion? Yeah, so we transition to heat exhaustion?
Yeah.
How
so
does that happen?
Heat exhaustion is basically, it's a worse situation than just getting yourself a sunburn. In this case, you actually start to have your core temperature of your body kind of rise above what recommended levels should be. You start to incorporate effects of dehydration into this as well. And so there's a fine line between heat exhaustion and what people have probably heard of before as something called heat stroke. So heat exhaustion is really, it's a heat-related illness, you know, after exposure to high temperatures for a prolonged period with associated dehydration, which just means like you're losing fluids. I guess when you say dehydration, people should know that it's not just that if you're, you know, going to the bathroom and losing fluid that way. You also, if you're not taking it in, your body utilizes water. We're made of 70% of water, our bodies are. And so we have to keep a balance of that water. It's a very fine line. When that starts to get depleted, it can cause significant health problems. And so confusion, all these kinds of things. And eventually dehydration can lead to death. So it's a really serious matter. But the point is that with heat exhaustion, you start actually losing fluid through evaporation. So just us speaking.
Perspiration.
Yeah, exactly. You're sweating and then you're not taking fluid in. And then the high temperatures are causing the muscles to metabolize more water and your organs are trying to shift that water to them to stay alive. And so there's a lot of things that go on when you get to the point of heat exhaustion. And that's why many people will really feel pretty ill, but they may not start to get the severe symptoms of heat stroke where you actually start getting confusion, severe headache,
dizziness,
dizziness, right? Potentially seizure, and ultimately even death in some people. So the like I said, heat exhaustion is kind of, it's on its way to heat stroke. And so at that point, you start identifying, well, one, never get yourself there in the first place by hydrating and staying protected from the sun. But if it does happen.
So basically there are two types of heat exhaustion, to generalize, water depletion and salt depletion in the body.
Right.
And my understanding is water depletion is signs include excessive thirst or weakness, headache, maybe even loss of consciousness. For salt depletion, it signs for people to just be mindful, not just for themselves, but for family members or people that they may be visiting with. It could be nausea, vomiting, muscle cramps, and dizziness.
Right, right. So salt depletion, you know, when you're actively sweating, you're actually expressing salt, a large number. You may notice that because if you're riding in a car on a hot day and you notice that when your shirt dries out, that there's like a salt ring around it. Well, your body is expelling all of that salt. So when that happens, then that's something that can cause critical changes. The muscle cramps, you know, can actually become or occur, I should say, because of the loss of salt. And salt, sodium and chloride, they're essential for muscles to function properly. And so that's why you can get that cramping. But also sodium levels, which is the sodium chloride, the first portion, sodium levels have a major role in brain function. And so the dizziness can be kind of the beginnings, like I said, leading to heat stroke, where you have that sodium depletion and it starts to affect how nerves start working. And our biggest nerve is our brain. And so
right.
Then you can start to get that dizziness. The nausea and vomiting is kind of your body's, it's counterintuitive because you start vomiting, you're going to have more fluid loss on top of your salt depletion. So it's really a vicious cycle once it starts to happen.
Two questions then. For my default position is anytime that something is going wrong or you see something going wrong with somebody medically,
mm-hmm.
Or with yourself, always contact your doctor.
Yeah,
or
right.
get help. But what are some treatments for heat exhaustion up until that point where you might contact a doctor.
Right. I mean, you can have, with all these things, different degrees, just like your sunburn can be a mild sunburn or it can be a severe sunburn, but it doesn't mean always that you have to get, you know, immediately to the hospital. With heat exhaustion in the early, you know, stage, if you can catch it, when you're starting to kind of feel a little weak and you just don't feel right, you might start to feel a little nauseated and you kind of just feel real hot, and then you may even start to get some cold chills. Those are signs, okay, I got to stop what I'm doing. I got to get out of the sun. I've got to cool down as quickly as possible. So most of the time, just even dumping some cool water on their head or your head is something that could definitely start to alleviate that process, and then hydrating. And you don't want to just go guzzling a ton of water, because then you can kind of have a fluid shift in your body where it can deplete your sodium level. So you want to just start sipping water, cool water, and then also get, you know, some cool water or a cool wash rag on your face. Get in the shade, maybe with a fan blowing too. And then generally, usually within, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, you're going to start feeling a whole lot better.
And avoid caffeine and alcohol.
Yeah, exactly, because those things will only dehydrate you, right? And so then you want to just get hydrated, you want to get rest. And then if you start feeling like you're getting, developing a severe headache, or that you start becoming somewhat confused, it may be too late and you may be heading towards, you know, heat stroke. And at that point, you really would need to, depending on the situation, if you were close to a hospital, get there. Many times your primary care doctor, I mean, you can let them know, but at that point they may not be able to do much for you, because in that situation you would most likely require IV hydration or IV intravenous fluid, and maybe even a cooling blanket like they use in the emergency rooms. So the safest advice is, if things start getting to the point where someone's becoming confused, severe headache, and they're pale and they're feeling chills, then at that point, they could call their doctor just to confirm that they should go to the ER, but the safest advice would be,
seek emergency help.
Right,
at that,
exactly.
At that point.
Get some help, exactly.
For how about our last topic, dehydration?
Right. Yeah, so dehydration, we kind of alluded to that, before, about how important it is to stay hydrated, especially when you're active. Like if you're doing exercise, you're definitely utilizing water much more rapidly than if you're just sedentary. The muscles require water in order to create energy and to function, but also we require fluid levels to be maintained in what we call homeostasis, or a natural level, to maintain our blood pressure and blood volume. And so during dehydration, what can happen is if you're not bringing in enough fluid, or you're utilizing too much fluid and not replenishing it fast enough, your body will start to shift fluid from one direction to another, because its intention will be to keep your organs alive, you know. And so it'll actually start to bring fluid from the outside of your body to the inside.
I'm almost a little bit embarrassed to mention this, but actually I decided that I wanted to mention this to our listeners. I was exercising at a gym a number of years ago and got done, overheated myself, and the next thing I know, there were two really great EMT people resuscitating me.
Oh boy.
And I went to the hospital. I went to one of our local hospitals. I thought I was in excellent shape, and they checked what they were supposed to, and it all came down to dehydration.
Right, yeah.
This is a subject, and I was one of those people that never thought it could happen to me, and it could happen more quickly than you think about.
Oh, sure.
So I'm encouraging all of our listeners to really take it to heart that these are tips and suggestions to be aware of, because it could happen to anybody.
Right.
What are the causes of dehydration?
Yeah, so there's, you know, multiple causes. One would be that you're losing fluid. One is that you're not taking it in fast enough. So the obvious would be that you get yourself sick with a virus or something. You have diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, those types of things. You lose a significant amount of fluid very quickly. Sweating, though, like I said, when you're active and you're actively sweating, you're losing fluid then as well. Now, people that are older, so even like say 65 and over, you can become dehydrated much more quickly. Your body's ability to retain fluid or to shift fluid becomes diminished as we all get older. So you have to really be mindful of that. But what's a little caveat there is that many people that, especially like I said, in the 65 and over population, they won't feel thirst like they did when they were 40. In 40, your body will give you a clue, your mouth will get dry. But many people, they'll be fine. They have a sip of water. I'm good all day. I'm not thirsty. You know, and next thing you know, they're passing out.
Well, now you have, may have just touched on what I did to myself, because I thought a little bit more that I was okay at when I was running, and I wasn't. And it can happen pretty quickly. Let's talk about symptoms in children.
Right. Yeah. So in children, especially in very small children, so say like, you know, under five, not always so easy in those cases to assess for dehydration for parents, because they, you know, can't necessarily answer, oh, I'm thirsty or I'm not. I mean, sometimes they will, but they won't always, you know, be able to be reliable historians. And so many things you can kind of tell would be as if their mucous membranes, we call it, so that would be like their mouth, their lips, if those look parched or dry, there's a first indicator right there that they're probably having some dehydration. The other would be if their eyes look kind of like more sunken back than usual. That could be an issue with newborn babies. They have what we've called them, or the layperson calls them, soft spots in their skull. They're called fontanelles, but there's two little areas in the front of the skull and in the back of the skull in newborns that haven't closed yet until several months after they're born. And in little babies with dehydration, you'll see that those fontanelles will be kind of concave. They'll be kind of recessed. Yeah, and that can be that retraction occurring because of loss of fluid. So that's another thing. One thing we also do to assess small children as well, and even in adults as well, you can actually just pinch your skin, like on your arm, and if something occurs that's called tenting, where the skin stays up and then it slowly goes back down, that can be a sign of dehydration right there. And that can many times be a really good indicator at an earlier stage than any of these other findings.
There are probably a number of folks who are listening now who will hear this information when we have a podcast ready and available, who either know people or they suffer from diabetes themselves. One of the things I was reading, that high blood sugar levels can cause increased urination and fluid loss.
Right.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's actually a really severe problem, especially for very uncontrolled diabetics, because what'll happen is that not only the fluid loss of your body trying to get rid of sugar out of your blood, it filters through your kidneys and makes you urinate more because it's trying to spill out sugar. But also just the fact that you have high sugar levels in the blood, your body tries to draw fluid from the body, from the muscles, from the other organs into the blood to try to balance out that what we call homeostasis, the term I used before. So trying to get to the point where those sugar levels are more towards a normal level, but they may be at 400, 500. And at that point, you can develop something called DKA, or diabetic ketoacidosis. It's a big fancy word for a very severe condition that some diabetics can develop because of the effect of dehydration, very high sugars, and they can actually go into a coma and have seizures, and it's a very serious matter. But yeah, diabetics are definitely more frail and more prone to dehydration.
This has been terrific information. Before we end this segment on Eye on the Community, are there any last minute thoughts that you have for our listeners? I know we've done some great summer safety and sun exposure tips. We've talked about dehydration. We've talked about heat exhaustion. What else would you like to share with our listeners that they should think about, not only during the summer, but year round?
Right. Yeah. I think the take home message, because, you know, it's a lot of information. It's like just like any other time when you go to your doctor and they tell you all kinds of stuff. Well, hopefully they do. And then you remember like the first four words they said and probably the last two. And they're like, what happened? So anyway, so to kind of reiterate, I think the important things are is definitely hydration. So if you are, you know, especially if you're drinking at a party, alcohol, that kind of thing, you want to make sure you're balancing that with some water so that you don't just become dehydrated, because most likely you'll be out in the sun and you're drinking and you're just, it's a compounded situation. But the other one, and a really important one, is making sure that you are looking out for your kids, because they're not going to come out of the pool and say, hey, mom, dad, can you reapply my sunblock because I don't want to get that sunburn? They're probably not going to do that. And I'll speak that to that with, because my kid does not, and I have to haul her out of there and try and reapply. So I think that's a big one. The main thing is, you know, just to think about, okay, where are we going today? how much sun exposure are we going to get, and let's be prepared. Let's just throw even some of that spray on sunblock, or now they even make the sunblock in like little wipe, little packets that you can just throw in your glove compartment, and you just unzip the little packet and you wipe it on the sun exposed areas, your ears and all that, and you're good to go. And you don't have to have a bunch of cream everywhere or sprays and all those things. So I think, you know, just trying to think about those things and prevent those burns, and heaven forbid, you know, prevent those other severe situations. I think that's the main thing to take home from this this message.
Our very special guest in studio today has been Dr. Eric Hansen. He's a board-certified primary care physician specializing in family practice medicine. He's president of the San Bernardino Medical Society, the seventh largest medical society in California, which is the county arm of the California Medical Association. I mentioned when we started the program, he also chairs the solo and small group practice forum for the California Medical Association. It has been our honor to have you in studio with us today. These are wonderful tips for people to share with family and friends. At last, I did want to mention that Dr. Hansen is affiliated with Choice Medical Group, the Victor Valley's only locally owned healthcare medical group, and we thank you for coming in today, and we wish you the best.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. I really appreciate you having me, and it's been great to, you know, be able to get a message out to the community. It's hard to, you know, reach out in any other way, really. So having you guys do these services for the public, it's a really important thing, and we really appreciate you guys doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.